At the U.S. Open Tennis Championship in New York, Roger Federer and Rafael Nadal are still alive. They could meet up in the finals. The top-seeded American, Andy Roddick, has been knocked out. One of the great American players of the past who dropped by the tournament is a former U.S. Open champ, Andre Agassi, who was once the top tennis player in the world. He retired in 2006. He returned to the Open this year to sign copies of his autobiography, Open, which is now out in paperback. That meant he was at the Open as a spectator.
You know, it's a flood of emotions for me when I come back to New York any time during the year, but especially this time. It's memories that take me so far back to a wild teenager being called a punk from somebody in the stands, to some of my greatest victories, to obviously the last memory I have here on the court, which was me saying goodbye to a sport I've played my whole life. So just a flood of emotions. I'm never quite sure how to place it, but it always feels great.
I read somewhere that you showed up at the U.S. Open and signed some books, but did not want to be in the spotlight, didn't want to be part of the festivities, which you're Andre Agassi. You could easily have been. You didn't do interviews there. Was that a conscious choice on your part?
You know, I'm selective with how I engage with the game and where I engage with the game, you know, and my interest is contributing, you know. It's not about, you know, being out there celebrating anything for myself, you know. I mean, the book that I spent 3 years writing, I believe, is going to affect people generationally speaking. I think it's going to have a huge impact.
What do you mean by affect people generationally speaking?
Well, you know, I mean, my book, I don't know if you've read it or not, but it's, you know, I've poured thousands of hours into it, making sense of a life that people can relate to in a lot of different ways. You know, my life was about a lot of rebellion. My life was about identity issues and being labeled and being told who I was by older people. My life was about forgiveness of yourself, forgiveness of your parents. It's a book that's going to help teenagers find themselves.
Well, let's talk about that, because you're talking about trying to affect teenagers. When you were a teenager, you write, even though you were being pressed to play tennis and you were tremendously talented, you didn't like it.
Yeah, I had a real hate for the game early on, and the hatred came from what it felt like it was doing to my life. You know, I was a child of four, and I was a baby of the family, and, you know, everybody had that plan in their future from my father to be a great tennis champion, the quickest road to the American dream, him being an Armenian living in Iran, immigrant.
So your father wanted you to be a great tennis champion.
He wanted me to be a great tennis. So the life was chosen certainly for me at that stage, and then got sent away to a tennis academy and Bradenton, Florida at 13, where I started sort of that rebellion. So tennis always represented kind of a lot of drama in my life early on.
What has your family said about the book since it's been published?
My mom had a hard time reading the early years to hear. You know, I write the book in present tense, so it's pretty powerful to read what a 7-year-old is feeling and thinking and how it relates to your environment at home. When she got past those first few chapters, then she settled into it and was really proud of me for it. My father hasn't read it, told me he wouldn't, says he'd do the same thing over again, except it wouldn't be tennis, it'd be baseball or golf. Because he felt like I could play it longer and make more money. So it's nice to know some things don't change in life.
Why did your father refuse? Did he know what was coming? He had an even when he wasn't sure what you were writing, he said, "I'm not going to read this."
Yeah, he just said, you know, he's embarrassed about the fact that he doesn't read very well. You know, he speaks 5 languages, none of them very well at all. You know, turning his lens on himself hasn't been a luxury he's had in his life. He came here not speaking a word of English and held 2 jobs and raised 4 kids. So I think he just wanted me to go through my my experience with it and call it as I saw it.
It's commonly said that there hasn't been a truly great American tennis player on the stage since you retired. Andy Roddick, of course, is very, very good, but as if to underline the story, he's been upset at the U.S. Open this week.
Well, you know, I got to believe that if Federer and Nadal were around when me and Pete were playing,
Sampras.
Yeah, you might be asking somebody else, you know, why Pete and Andre aren't great, because, you know, you got guys out there right now that are doing things that are pretty remarkable, and Andy certainly has been in a tough time as it relates to coming into a dynasty of a couple champions there that are taking all the prizes. But he's one hell of a competitor, I tell you, and certainly brings a lot of a lot to the table. And you know, he's getting older now, and priorities sometimes shift. There's a lot of different decisions that need to get made, and if he makes them right, he still has a window of time to do some great things.
So you're not saying Americans have gotten worse. You're saying that Roger Federer and Rafael Nadal, who are not Americans, are just that good that they obliterate anybody else.
Well, that's certainly how it's been. It's not brain surgery to realize how much they've dominated, but what I'm sort of suggesting across the board, I think, is that globally speaking, tennis has gotten much more competitive. I think with the technology that's happened in the strings, it's changed the kind of athlete we're seeing now. We're seeing guys who rely a lot on their legs, play a long way behind the baseline, 6'4", taller, and still move well. And they swing for the fences and get rewarded for those swings. And you got courts like Wimbledon grass that's playing more like a hard court, and the indoor courts, the balls are heavier and the courts are slower. So the child that's growing up in America playing on the fast hard courts is challenged in a different way than we used to be throughout the year. Usually that was the best way to learn tennis, and then you go, you adapt to the clay. But now with where everything's falling, it's better to be growing up on the slow surfaces, learning how to adapt your game to a few occasions where you have to play quicker courts.
Mm. Now that you don't have to play tennis, do you ever play?
I do every now and then. You know, I do some charity stuff for my foundation. I tie that into some exhibitions across the globe here and there. I take my wife out every now and then when she wants some exercise. She talks me into hitting the ball and running her around, which I appreciate because she hits the ball back to me, and I still like.
You have Steffi Graf for a sparring partner.
Yeah, I still like the feeling of the ball off my strings. I just don't like the feeling of my body on the pavement.
A little hard on the knees and the ankles.
Yes, everything. Just the ground is getting further away from me every day.
Andre Agassi's book, Open, an autobiography, is now out in paperback. Thanks very much.
It was a pleasure. Thanks for your time.
Morning Edition from NPR News is produced by Barry Gordimer and Kara Tallow. Our senior producers include Tom Bullock, Cindy Carpian, Jim Wildman, Tracy Wall, and J.J. Sutherland. Our executive producer is Madalika Sika. The executive director of news programming is Alan McDonald. Morning Edition's theme music was written by B.J. Lederman and arranged by Jim Pugh. Renee Montaigne is on assignment traveling toward Afghanistan on this holiday weekend. I'm Steve Inskeep.